Okay, and now switched on. We've talked a bit about tongues, and sometimes you can get the idea that tongues is something that you do by yourself. And anybody can if they want to, and that somehow along the line people learn how to do it. The best way, there are lots of things we could talk about tongues, I don't know whether there'll ever be time reflect on that fully, because there are so many questions that it raises. But tongues is to do with an encounter with the Spirit, and the Bible tells us that. And if the gift of tongues is going to be authentic, it comes about when God touches us in some sort of way, at least initially. After that, it is often a route through to God touching us. And that sort of gives me my starting point this morning. As we were talking about the faithfulness of God and the grace of God this morning, thinking about that, it struck me that there's a piece in the Bible where it talks about the fact that we can... I may not have the words exactly right, but it says that we can come boldly to a throne of grace. Where we can find help in time of need. Sorry about the writing, but many of you will know, you know where that is roughly, don't you? It's somewhere in Hebrews 4, Hebrews 5. Think about this morning, about the fact that this morning, that we need that help. One of the words I would really like to get rid of, and this will sound absolutely dreadful, is the word grace. Okay, because grace isn't a Bible word, is it? It's an English word. And so it can't be a Bible word. The Bible word is something else. I think it's that word, which doesn't look anything like grace, and isn't the word grace, it's the word grace. Now what's the word grace? Okay, the word is help. So we come boldly to the throne of help. Okay. Now, what do we understand about a throne? A throne is a very strange word for us because we have a monarch who actually retains her role as long as she doesn't actually do anything. Okay, that's what you mean by a constitutional monarch. And that goes all the way back to the Glorious Revolution when William of Bridge came in 1680. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Throne doesn't really work. What are we talking about? No. I would like to say to a help desk, the problem is the last thing you get when you go to a help desk is actual help, isn't it? I'm going to call it a help station. But you can do some thinking about this, okay? There's a help station where we can find help in time of need. So here's the message, that we can come boldly, right? Without a queue. Without being sure whether it's the right desk we go to. Some time ago, that happened to me very often, I was travelling business class. And I won't tell you which country it was from or what the dominant nationality of the people who were getting on the plane were. And I'd been busy reading when they made the announcement. And When they made the announcement, I just joined the mob, who were not into standing in straight lines at all. You know, sort of he with the sharpest elbows got to the front with their children and got on the plane as though there were no numbered seats or anything. However, when I got to the front of the queue and showed my boarding pass, the person on duty said to me and immediately called me by name and pointed out that there was an alternative door that I could have gone through, which was completely empty, right? And when I walked through the door, away from this baying mob, I was taken to my seat, addressed by everybody there by name, generally had the experience of business class and upper class passengers that for some reason they think that God has made them better than everybody else, okay, for which they pay a huge amount of money. But that's about coming boldly. I hadn't heard the announcement. I wasn't sure whether that was the door for me. So I didn't use it. I just went in with everybody else. And what I'd really like you to pick up this morning, that whenever you need help, guys, whenever I need help, there's a place you can go where you will find help. Now, what's the catch? Because there is always a catch. If you're going to go and get help, you can't stay where you are. Okay? You can't stay trying to work through your problems on your own. Okay? You've got to go to the place of help. And I'd just like you to close your eyes for a few minutes, because I've been having to do this a bit this week. I know Andy's been having to do this hugely as well, and others of you, I know, have been struggling with this. But I'd just like to try and nail this just for a minute or two before we get on to the strategy stuff I want to talk about. And see if we can just envisage this. If somebody finds it useful to think of a throne of grace, then that's fine. You can have a throne of grace. But for those of us who are a bit more ordinary and need a station of help, a place for help, I'd like you just to envisage that there's a place for help. But first of all, just fix where you are at the moment with the problems you've got that you can't solve. Okay? While you're doing that, I'm going to be doing it with my problems that I can't solve at the moment, the things that really do worry me, the things that threaten to wake me during the night, the things that I'm relieved when I realise I didn't wake up, things that I like to get away from during the day. Those are the big things that we need help with. Think about those. And then consider the fact that Jesus is man in a help station somewhere. Now here's a choice. Make this choice that even if you fear that something dreadful will go wrong, you're going to leave those problems alone just for a little while. Okay? And walk with me, just walk a little way, until you come to the help station. By the Spirit, Lord, we pray that you will help us to see as you see, that our minds will become clear. Now, as you look at this place of help, whether it's a booth, whether it's a desk, whether it's an armchair, whether it's a golden throne with flunkies standing around it, whatever it is for you, I want you to look at the route up to it. And by faith, I want you to see it as absolutely clear. You haven't got to wait, you haven't got to take a ticket. The desk isn't empty. There's Jesus, and you're conscious of the fact that he knows just what you need, but he'd really, really like you to tell him what it is. And would you do that right now? Lord Jesus, I've got these things and they are really getting me down. I don't know what would solve, well, I think I know what would solve the problem, but probably I haven't got the answer at the moment, and there may be things you want to do first. But please, will you help me? And just at this point, by the Holy Spirit, take a moment or two to hear what he says to you, to feel his appreciation of you, to know that all the fullness of God lived in Jesus, and he's passing that on to you right at this moment. In the name of Jesus, receive help. I know that some of you, perhaps lots of you, have been having difficult times recently, and I guess I don't know everything about everybody. And sometimes I'm glad I don't, because knowing what I do know seems to be bad enough. I'm quite comfortable with the fact that sometimes it seems like a pressure. It's supposed to be a pressure, yeah? Paul talks about the fact that he had bricks and stuff chucked at him. He was being threatened by the police. He was chucked in the sea. He was in all sorts of places. Then he said, on top of that, I've got the care of the churches as well. So the care of the churches goes with the job, that's all okay. But we do want to be there to support one another. And the best way we can support one another is to point one another to Jesus. Because while we can do bits of help and we can listen, coming back to that throne of grace, that help station, is where it's all going to come together. Okay, I think I've got something between... just adjust the screen so that I know what's coming up. Oh no, sorry. I still haven't got used to the... it's upside down. Still... No, that's... It's... Okay, we're going to listen to a chunk of the Bible. I'm hoping to talk about most of this week and next. It'll be pretty familiar to most of you, but this just enables you to catch the atmosphere. The links are on the bottom of the slides, and we'll make sure that they go up with the recording. Here we go.
Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and he...
The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field.
He He called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out evil spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew. James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector. James, son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus. Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions.
Do not go among the Gentiles, or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, preach this message. The kingdom of heaven is near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not take along any gold or silver or copper in your belt. Take no bag for your journey or extra tunic or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there and stay at his house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town. I tell you the truth, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town.
Okay. I chose to use Matthew in that particular circumstances for one simple reason. I've got a half-decent video version of Matthew, but I hadn't of Luke. If I'd have used Luke, you'd have got a different sort of picture. Essentially, the words are the same, although Matthew was really interested in lining up who the disciples were. That wasn't a priority for Luke, so he's more brief and to the point. But what happens in Luke is that you get this episode with the 12 disciples, and then presumably this is going on over a while, this being sent out, and then you get the feeding of the 5,000, and then you get the transfiguration. And then during that, this is why I think it's an internal test, an alpha test at this stage. Andy's been talking about beta testing this week, and I ended up looking it up because of this. But here he is in the alpha test stage, because what happens is he's sent the disciples out with all authority, and then he comes across the fact that there's a fuss going on because they couldn't heal somebody. Right? So presumably this trial, this test period was going on while these guys were learning on the job. And then a few other things happen. And then at the end of chapter 9 in Luke, at the beginning of chapter 10, it says, and after all this, he appointed 70 others. 70 who weren't in the inner circle, 70 who were going to do the beta testing, and they were going to go out and try it out in a different environment. And they tried it out, and they came back, and they said, wow, isn't this fantastic? And Jesus said, hang on, keep the main thing, the main thing. The main thing is that your Father loves you, that I love you, and the other stuff is on the side. Now, we'll go through that, but I wanted to come back to at the beginning of the text where it says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and illness. Then it comes to this sort of tipping point, this fulcrum, where he says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Now, let's just take a little snapshot thought at that particular point and say, this is a very strange thing for the God who created the earth to say. Okay? If God wanted to save the earth, he would save the earth. You know, the God who could send a flood, could put creation into being, could make the sun stand still, and all those sorts of things, could have done it any way he chose. But here is Jesus, Son of God, who is the essence of the Father, knows everything that's in Jesus' heart, saying, we've got a problem, guys. We've got a problem. And I know that some of you have wondered when we have wanted to focus in on God adding to our numbers and not being content with where we are. But you know, Bill Hybels says, how much ministry can you do with £100? Well, the answer is £100 worth. And if you have £200, you can do £200 worth. And that's the way God chooses to work it. We're hugely grateful, wonderfully grateful, for the commitment of people in Dayspring. We're thankful for the financial commitment, which people get sick of, because I continually boast about when I'm with other ministers. I do my best not to tell them about how good you guys are, because it only makes them irritated. Yeah? What's really nice, if you're a minister, is for other ministers to tell you how badly it's going for them. That is really encouraging. It always is to know that it's not working for anybody else either. During the week I was talking and I had avoided any mention of money. And somebody said, asked me about how we were doing financially. And of course, even though we've had a bit of a struggle, we're doing great. It's really good. And another thing I wouldn't tell them about, although I did point out to Dave Day during the week, is what's happened about the thing with India. You know, we're supporting the slum school. And I think I said this to you once, that immediately we had committed ourselves to it, we began to realise how difficult it would be to raise for an extra £4,000 a year over top of everything. But you know, we've been really impressed. I'll tell you how impressed we've been. In a couple of weeks' time, Wendy and I should be going away, but the first thing we're going to do, and I'll show you a video about this next week, is to go right up to the Myanmar border in Thailand to spend some time with a couple there who run an organisation which is concerned with child trafficking, with the refugees who come into Thailand from Myanmar. And we will be careful, and we won't commit until we've talked about it afterwards with people. But we're just wondering whether, given the fact that people give so well, whether we can stretch ourselves a little bit further and get involved with another group and to see what God will do. I don't know what the answer will be to that, but we're really grateful for all the effort that people put in. You know that we found ourselves in quite a difficult position with Cabaret, where I was conscious, and it's part of the responsibility if you pastor a church, that we were pushing people really hard. We've mentioned this several times. I don't need to go over it again, other than to say that as a result of that, we began to think in terms of this year being a fallow year. A fallow year is not a year in bed, okay? It's a year where you give the land a rest and you see what happens. We thought that we don't know, we've been trying to work out as we're going along. We're still in the process. I hope, if not this week, next week, we'll be getting some more feedback from you on this. But we thought that with the in, out and up dimensions of church, and this was something that Rolf had brought to us, that it could very well be that if this year we focused on the upward and we focused on the inward, that would result in a new energy that would thrust us forward to where God has called us in terms of mission. But we're not expecting that nothing will happen. I don't know whether you've ever left land fallow that's had different plants growing on it, but it still grows stuff, and quite often it seems more prolific. The only thing is you'll have a potato here and a carrot there and something else growing up somewhere else, and it'll be all higgledy-piggledy all over the place. But of course the land produces life of itself. And need more work, because during this week David spoke to me about the set of rotors and the gaps that were in them, and I said to him, well, can you write it down for me? And he wrote this down. He said, currently we're struggling with people on Sundays as well as cabarets, with people for PA, refreshments and setup. On PA, we've been running 2 weeks on, 4 weeks off road, and then mentioned some things that have got problems there. We've had problems on set. Until recently, we had a big rotor on refreshments, and that's turned out to be a struggle as well. And we know that that's because some of you who would if they could and can't at the moment, some of you have had persistent health problems and difficulties and just not available for one reason or another, just hasn't worked out. We know that there are difficulties there. We can think about how we can, you know, one of the first things that people come up with as a suggestion when we're saying we need to do some more is, can we possibly do less? And we're always careful about can we do less, because there are certain kinds of people who like doing less. There's a word for them, but well, there's several words for them. But I was really encouraged by the fact that when we were having a conversation about this, Rolf said to us, well, look, I wonder if we can do it this way. And so one of the things we will probably try out, that if we can, sometimes when Rolf's on the singing, you know he does this one-man band thing where there's a drum as well. It is, what he's going to do is, so we don't need anything else, he's going to have this thing that flips up with pictures on behind his head. And he's going to have a mouth organ and one of those squeaky things under his arms as well. Actually, no, he didn't say that, but that's just where my mind... What he has said is that we may be able to work out a way of having a mini PA so that we just cut down to it all being controlled from out the front, and we'd certainly do without video, which needed sound on those days. We'd obviously need the visuals for the songs. But so we're looking at where things can cut, but we need labourers. We need not only labourers in the harvest field, but we need labourers back in the barn. And we know that God needs to do something for us. Some of you will say, oh, but we've been here before. Yeah, well, seasons change. It's a new season. Andy's been talking about it being a new season. And I know there are some people who say, ah, well, when people say it's a new season, we've heard all that before. Yes, we have. Do you know, it's been spring before. Okay? Because developments in church life and in the whole of life go through cycles, and they're progressive as well. Okay? So you get both. And I think this is going to be a cycle for change and new growth, and we're going to see some different things happening. We know that there are going to be new things that are happening in Open Blue. We know we need to see God open the windows of heaven so that there's a blessing that we can't contain. And we need people to pray that he will send labourers into the harvest field. And of course, the funny thing was this, that he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And do you know what the effect was? Let's assume there were the 12, and then there was another crowd around. They said, right, we'll do that. And they began to pray, oh God, send out labourers into the harvest field. And Jesus said, have you finished praying? They said, yes. He said, right, you, and you, go. Okay? And that's part of what praying into the harvest field is, that we'll be channels. Of course, everywhere we talk, there's more help needed. I think this is up on the website. Not on the website, it's on Facebook. It's around anyway. But Anna sent a message that she needs somebody to help at the moment. So there's never a position where your skills needn't be used. But what I want to do is to, and I think I've got time to set this up, even if we don't do it this week, and it may be, we may be able to just able to do this. This cartoon came up on Dave Walker's site during the week, just a reminder about what we're understanding by church, because I've talked a little bit about what happens on Sundays, and Sundays is not church. Sometimes I even talk to people about coming to church, but I don't really mean that, because where's church? Okay, church is here, and here, and here. It's up in the tower block, it's over there, it's walking along the road, it's sitting down beside the road, it's at the school gates, it's wherever you work. Church is wherever God's people come together. The word for church, as we said last week, is the word for gathering. So, let's have a little think. We talked about the up and the in and the out. Okay. Script that some people have been using. We know that our focus, because God has called Dayspring to be a missional church, that's our organising principle, that's our dominant culture, is out. That's mission. We know as well that there are other things that we need. There needs to be an inward drive in community, which leads outward as communitas. There's an upward drive, which some people think of just in terms of worship, is often better to use the word spirituality. Now, let's have a look. This is where it is. What I want to do is to think about the up dimension for a little while this morning. And this is going to take 7 minutes, and I think we can take 5 afterwards. And some of you will really enjoy this, because this is an exploration about how, as churches have become new and as they've changed, there's been a new understanding of what worship might mean. Hang on for a moment. It will take 7. You'll probably need 10 minutes to talk about this. Let's pull back a bit and do this slightly differently. Okay. We'll go to this particular section in the text. You know, here's a really interesting thing that Jesus said. He said to the people later on, make sure that you get a purse and you put some money in it. He said to them later on, if you haven't got a sword, go out and buy one. Okay? He actually said that at one place to his disciples. But during this period of testing, this is what he said. Do not get any gold or silver or copper to take with you in your belts. No bag for the journey or extra shirt or sandals or a staff, because the worker is worthy of his keep. Okay? Now, why do you think that he said that? I was going to do this next week, but let's do it this week. I think it would be a good idea. Have a word with one another and have a little think about why do you think Jesus said that to them. Okay, have you done your initial thinking on that? Why do you think Jesus said that? Now, here's the other question. Why do you think you might be wrong in thinking that was why Jesus said it? What happens when you turn the thing around the other way? Or doesn't it ever enter your mind that you might be wrong? Okay. But assuming that it does, have a look and see why it might be wrong, what might be a different reason for it. Has anybody managed to come up with two opposing explanations yet? Okay. Nigel, you would. We'll hear yours in just a moment. Let's wait till we get... You've got two opposing explanations. Let's find out... Have we got a third one with three? Let's start with Nigel's. Get it over and done with. Nigel, what were your two opposing explanations, Nigel?
First one is... It relies on faith in God, but if you haven't got anything, to get stuff you need faith.
Yeah.
The other option is to get the stuff needs time. If they've had time to think about it, they might have gone, no thank you. So by going, they do it now without any time to stop and think.
And of course, both of those are tenable, because if you think about what happened at the end of Luke chapter 9, Jesus, there was one guy who said, oh, he said, let me just go and stay with my family for a while until my father dies and he's buried. So that fits in there. So there's the idea of trusting God. What did you guys come up with? Was it similar or slightly different?
I'm thinking that you don't take any money with you because a worker is worth his own... They're worth being paid. It's about, but then... surely Jesus didn't want people to give him money for healing people, so that doesn't sit. We wouldn't have no strings attached, isn't it?
Yeah, there's probably a bit of an answer there, but essentially it's a point, because he actually says in that passage, freely you have received, freely give. So the idea wasn't that... that you're imposing on people and expecting something. It's a really quite complex thing. Is that there was a Sue, you had a hand as well, third one.
We said you might say don't take anything now, but then later take something, because when you're in training for something, you train for something slightly harder than you're actually going to do.
Yeah.
And then the opposing thing to that is that it might be right for a particular situation, in that some things are not... it might be right in the first situation they were going through that they didn't take any money, but in the second situation it might have been the right thing that they did need to take money and supplies to be prepared.
Yeah, that's I think so. Yet another thing. Do you know what I've had this in my mind for a little while, and I've thought about another angle on this. You see, when these guys went, there was a standard idea that if travelling preachers came into your house or guests of any kind, for a couple of days, you would entertain them. Okay, that was the expectation. Now, there are many of us like this, that we find it much easier to entertain others than be entertained ourselves. We don't like to be dependent. And that might have been one of the things that was in there as well. What about the fact that it's like the year of Jubilee? Everybody... You see, you've got some people were the sons of businessmen. Peter and Andrew, their dad had got a fishing business. But everybody was on the same level. And as for this business, I think Jesus had his tongue in his cheek when he said about the worker being worthy of his hire. Because what did Jesus do when he had to pay the taxes? Anybody remember what he did? Somebody else tell us. It's all right, Nathan's actually... having to deal with the fact that now he's earning so much money he has to pay tax, or might have to pay tax. It's not the nicest thing in life, is it? He told them, put a line down, get a fish, and there was the tax in the fish's mouth. Gosh, I wish I could do that. Phil, you're like me, and you pay your tax bill once every 6 months, I guess. And you always wonder whether it's going to quite work out the way that it should do. So all sorts of things, but being on a level playing field as well. But here's another thing. I think Jesus was encouraging them to start small. Remember, these were the guys who were going to be the pillars of the church later on, and were going to help all sorts of other people into belief. And my finishing thought for today is this. And it's not an original one. It's something that Sarah and Julian Richards brought at the conference, and you may say we knew that anyway, but I didn't. So if you're ahead of me, you can demonstrate it for me. And that's this, that when it comes to things like healing and casting out demons and trusting God, it's a good idea to start small. Okay? And they cited an example. They do things called healing cafes, right, where they have people who have got a variety of needs who come in and they say, we'll pray for you over a cup of tea or whatever. And on this particular occasion, they were helping a church into it, because these guys lead New Wine Wales as well as being involved in Pioneer. They said that what happened was this group were all enthusiastic, and the first thing they did was to go to the person in a wheelchair and start to pray for them. Okay? And they said, you don't start like that. Start with the small ones. And when we were discussing this recently, somebody said, yeah, but I wouldn't ask for prayer for a headache. Well, why not? If it's a learning situation. Start small. Let's just see what would happen if we started to believe that God would answer the little prayers and give us words of knowledge for our children and insights that we need for our own situations, and provide us with little bits of money at the beginning while we're doing our first level of testing and learning, and then to see what would happen later on. If you find that you're with brothers and sisters who are unwell, then say to them, could I pray for you? Would God heal you on this occasion? And start small. You know, we do want to see God heal the big things, don't we? And how do we want to see God heal the big stuff? But as we go, as we're sent out, I wonder whether one of the things we're going to learn this year is to expect God to answer prayer in the small stuff. Have a think about that. We'll do some more work on that next week in the context of the up dimension and the inward dimension. And that will be the end of this series. Okay, that's it. Thank you.